We are live, season four, episode 18 of the Decoded Podcast. And I'm glad that we waited to go live because I think I was pretty hot there for a bit. I started off cool, and then Chris, in your way of speaking to me and being a good friend, you helped me. I wanted to say you pushed me into the hot zone, but you didn't do anything. You were simply conversing with me. And then I took myself into the hot zone, which is good because I told you that's part of who I am. I feel like I need to enter into it's like the space shuttle coming back from space to Earth. When it's up there and it's just orbiting the Earth, it's all good. It's doing its job, it's moving around, it's following the rules of the universe, right? But then when it decides that it's time to head back home, it's gonna come through some hot, fiery atmosphere to get back to where it should be. And when it gets home, if it didn't explode in the middle of that fire,
In re-entry.
right, in re-entry, if it gets back and it's okay, then it's all good to go. And I think for me, that heat, that fire of re-entry is it's part of who I am. It's part of my process of being me. Now, I'm not saying I can't change and learn to deal with things in a different way, but for as long as I can remember, I would say probably 44 years, this is how I re-enter. And I've learned maybe in the last 10 years, no, probably five, that the fiery part of the re-entry sometimes when I get back to Earth, I'm still very hot. The fire's gone, but the effect of that heat is still within me, and I need more.
You've lost a little bit of the landing gear, maybe a little bit of the insulation.
Couple of heat shields
A
have
couple of
fallen
heat shields
off.
have fallen off, yeah.
So now I'm back, I'm down, and I'm in a cooler state, but yeah, if we were to go live during me in re-entry, it would have to be a pay-per-view type thing because I wouldn't want to have that out for the public because there's a lot of things that are said, there's a lot of things that happen during that re-entry that are part of my process to be whole again. And once I'm whole, I'm okay. But it's that re-entry stage that it's interesting. It's a great visual for me though, because it's exactly what happens to me. You know, you're living your life, you're in a good state, you're exposed to something, or someone tells you something, or somebody asks you to do something, and boom, you're flying through that atmosphere and it's friggin' hot outside. And then once you land, you cool down and you then you're whole again and you move on. You don't have to worry about that re-entry phase. So thanks for helping me land. That was awesome.
Touchdown. Is that what it's
Touchdown.
called? Touchdown? Is that what
Yeah.
it's called? Touchdown?
You
When
could call it touchdown.
yeah, I think that's the actual term. That's what they say. We have touchdown. We have touchdown. We have launch. We have touchdown. I forget what the term is. You're either landing in the water or in the middle of the desert. I got a thing I want to bounce off you.
Do it. So I'm going to write down before you do that. I'm just going to write down on my paper here, season four, episode 18. And I'm going to write as the first note, Roland's re-entry.
Re-entry.
Go ahead, dude.
Well, it is connected with re-entry, and
Uh-oh.
it's a good segue to something that that Karen and I were talking about a little bit last night, and it's around the my feelings. I sort of told my the feelings around when we if we were going to be leaving, this time it would be for an extended period of time. Like, I did not in any way, I still do not think that we are going to be back in our classrooms on the 25th. So that's just my standing there. If the conditions that made us leave, if the conditions that made us leave, if the science and the conditions that made us not return after the winter or Christmas break, if they're still existent, in my mind, there's zero reason for us to be back in the school. So that's my, I'm going to hold that moving forward. If we do go back in, if we are asked to go back to school, and we do, this is my next layer of thinking to this, is that I have a sense like, okay, so we left school in a flash on March 13th, told it was going to be short term, ended up being for the remainder of the semester or the remainder of the school year if you're in elementary. In that time, tools were designed that not only supported the learning of the students that had flipped to adaptive learning or online learning or remote learning, and everyone kind of figured out what their version of that was pretty quick. And in doing so, we designed a system that was agile enough to, on the sort of like on the turn of a dime, leave. And that sense of precariousness that we now have the tools to leave and pivot with a day's notice, I think is going to have an impact on mindsets the next time we are back in school. I feel like the roots of what's the word? Comfort and connection of the school building being the hub of education are a little salted right now. And I think that from the moment we walk back into the school, we are going to feel like we're on notice. And the next day, we're going to be constantly in that state of anxiety and potential, like being triggered. Well, will we be sent home tomorrow? Because now we have a pattern of procedure and protocol that shows that we can. We don't have access to the thinking anymore of, well, they'll never send us home. How would they ever get us to do the work from home? How would we ever teach a classroom remotely? How would I ever be able to do my autism program from home? How would I ever be able to do my multiple exceptionality programming from home? We no longer have access to that comfortable mindset, because we've all been fully trained in the fire drill of getting the hell out of the school. And on Monday, you're teaching virtually. So if I'm going to pull myself from being back, so from sounding so dire, I think how we approach our relationship building is going to, I feel like it's going to be critical for education in general, that teachers understand and accept to a degree, at least start to examine, what does it mean to carry the burden of being maybe the singular tether to education between the families that you're teaching and yourself? Like, you no longer have the halls to be able to run into a kid that you need to see. You no longer have pickup drop-off to accidentally check in with a kid's parents or guardians. You no longer have the, teaching partner just in the classroom, the next one over, that you can check in like, oh yeah, what are you doing with that algebra today? How are we going to do that? Like, everything now is so single-threaded that we are, I think, officially in a space where the school building as a community hub is in jeopardy without being able to sort of really consider wrong approach. I think what we need to consider is, what does it mean to outsource that community connection to the teachers that are delivering curriculum on behalf of a school? So for example, right now, I'm a teacher that I'm an educator, but I'm also representing a school. Well, whatever the flavor is of that school, how do I deliver that from my house? How do I deliver? Because those things are the big picture comfort zones that make a community feel like it's stitched together. It's the thing that someone is able to say 10, 15, 20 years down the road, oh yeah, I went to G.L. Roberts High School in Oshawa. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you say. And I feel like we no longer have that. That language is starting to move out of our comfort zone. A grade 9 student right now, if they continue to do remote, adaptive, reactive learning, where we're in and out and in and out and in and out, I wonder if they're going to say, oh yeah, I went to and name that school. Well, the school I'm teaching at is Keswick High School. Oh yeah, I went to Keswick High School. Will they be as quickly to say that? Will that be a bit of jargon that students will say down the road? Or will they just say, yeah, I don't even know what they would say. You're not going to, we won't have access to the same flavor and tone of being associated with a school community. I feel like that's really in jeopardy right now. And I do feel that if we return on the 25th, individuals are going to be thinking to yourself, any day now we're going to get pulled.
You laid down so much there.
Sorry, man. I should have parsed that out a bit more.
No, dude. I didn't say that to have you say you should have this and you should have that. I'm just saying there's so much there. Like, we could talk for hours just about what you just said. So let me see what I can give back based on what you just dropped, which is awesome. I think, first of all, we've created a new fluency in education. Because we've created a new fluency. So let me add, so Tim's joining us. So welcome, Tim, from Teachers on Fire. And in the middle of you, Chris, talking about what I'm calling the new fluency of, like, we walk into school one day and then they shut down the school the next day and everybody's just remote again, and not remote again. You're in Mr. Chidiak's grade 3 class. Here's your Chromebook. If you're in class long enough, he's going to teach you what to do with it. Because at any moment, we could say to you, you're not coming back tomorrow. You're learning at home for the rest of the week. And everybody just picks up and just turns on their computers, and we just go right into it seamlessly, the way that everybody envisions it to be. Mm-hmm. But people who don't know what we're doing envision it. Oh, it's simple. Turn on your computer, start teaching. It's not. It's very layered. There's a lot of nuances. There's a lot going on there that I'm not going to get into right now. But this is the new fluency. The can of worms has been open. There is no more, like Tim said, it means no more snow days. It's exactly what it means. Education is now going to be, well, I hope it doesn't change from 5 days a week, but it's 5 days a week, whether you're face-to-face or whether you're remote, and I really loved what you said, adaptive or reactive. Whatever it is, everybody now knows the can of worms has been opened. There's no more, well, how could we do that? We're doing it. Whether we like it or not, we're doing it. So it is wide open. Even in elementary school, grade ones, kindergartens, log in, go to class, right? So I wrote down, it's a new fluency. The can of worms has been opened. I think the other thing I thought was, well, the unions are going to be all over this, right? So, you know, the unions are now, well, I'm hoping they are. I'm hoping that they are now sitting at their boardroom tables or in their Zoom calls thinking, okay, this is our new reality now. We need to think of how do we protect our teachers in this new fluency, this new reality. I got an email from my union this week saying, hey, if we're treating this like school, you can't have students in a Zoom call without you there. You're not supervising your students. And I'm like, we need to reconsider this whole thing, right? We need to reconsider this whole thing because do you know what I have to do to make sure I turn off all my links during a recess if I need to go to the washroom? Like, if I need to get up and leave my Google Meet call to go use the bathroom, that's like, I get up to leave my classroom and a kid walks in, says to somebody at recess, I forgot my gloves inside. So they let the kid go into the building. The kid walks into the classroom to get their gloves. There's no teacher there. What happens if the kid trips and falls and cracks their head open? There's no, who's going to pay for that? It's going to be a staff member because they weren't there to supervise the child. So what if something happens in a digital room when the teacher's away and two kids get themselves into a situation or whatever, right? So it's like people aren't, you need to think these things through. So now what do I do for recess? I tell all the kids, you need to hang up the call and leave the room. And then I hang up the call and I refresh a new link so that if they try to use the old link to come back to class, it's not going to work. Now, it's caused a lot of heartache because my kids are not fluent with anything we're doing. They're learning how to be. So they're like, I can't get in. And then they're like, well, I can't, if he won't let me in, I can't go to class. And then it's awesome because the other kids are stepping up and responding to the kids saying, go to the banner and click on the new link. It's the same thing every time Mr. C leaves the room. Just click on the link in the banner. It'll always be there. So it's very interesting. So new fluencies, can of worms is now open. Like Tim said, no more snow days. I think nothing's ever going to interfere again with everyday student learning, teacher teaching. There's no, we all now know the expectation. So I can imagine new teachers who are hired, you know, I'm sure eventually it'll be like, tell us about your virtual classroom. What would it look like? What would the tone be? Like they'll start asking questions about how you operate in a digital world. Because that's half your job now, maybe more. So there's a lot of things coming from this can of worms being open. You know, Tim saying it sounds so unstable in Ontario. He's saying BC has been face-to-face the entire year. No deviation at all. Well, I tell you, Tim, in Ontario, I have to say I'm biased, okay? So I'm not a big fan of our conservative government. I feel like they're incompetent and our Minister of Education is a joke, in my opinion, just my personal opinion about politics. So, you know, he says that we're going to be doing this. He told us we were going to do this the first week back from the break, which this is what we just had. And now he said that we're going for two more weeks. Well, I've entered into Chris Clough's mind. I'm now thinking like Clough. Clough is fully prepared that we're not returning to school mentally. And I've taken it upon myself to build that into my mindset. I am now prepared not to return to that building. So in my mind, I'm saying until March break. But really, I'm not prepared to go back.
Technically and emotionally?
Emotionally, I think probably need some more work.
Yeah, because there's two layers to that, right?
Emotionally, there's definitely more work. But technically, and here's the other thing too. If my computer stops working, then I guess I just call my principal and say, my car's broken down. I can't get to work. So you're going to have to, I'm letting you know this is an emergency. I'll call you when I can get to work. Like, because there's a lot of that as teachers, many of us want to do more than we're asked to do because that's who we are. But I'm getting to the point where, nah, if you're going to pull me in all these different directions, if life happens, life happens, and everybody around me is going to have to deal with it. I think that also comes from being a middle-aged dude, right? So mm-hmm. Anyway, Chris, that's what I wanted to say. Michelle has left a comment for the Ontario peeps, and she's telling us there's an ed announcement coming at 11 today. Wow, 11 a.m. on a Saturday. I wonder what they're going to tell us. So we'll see what that's all about.
I was looking just so the numbers, if we're including COVID numbers in the thinking here, and I think that, yes, COVID, when we think of the vectors of change, in education right now, COVID is definitely one of them. The funny thing is that we would have never been able to cobble together this current infrastructure if the conditions weren't already there. So we already had lots of tech in the classrooms. We already had teachers. It's funny, you know, like I don't think if anyone this time last year, let's say November last year, thought to themselves that by using Google Classroom in a blended model with their class would actually lead to them going full remote. I do believe that there were teachers that were using these tools that did not consider for a second that they would end up having to lean on those tools 100%, like 4 months out. So November last year, 4 months out, you're leaning on those tools as the only, well, whatever your learning management system was, but whatever your digital platform was, as being the singularity through which you're sort of connecting with your students. Any teacher that was doing it as blended. That's my first thinking. But with that in mind, the conditions for our current, different forms of education, that all the tools were there. In the same way, we don't think when we get into our car to drive to the grocery store that we could also run over someone. But that same tool could be used, like, you know, the tool as a weapon kind of thing. Like it has that use too, right? Or to smash, you know, smash into a fire hydrant. Like that exact same tool could actually have that same effect. And I think that, as we sort of consider what may or may not be announced today, I when I looked at BC's numbers, like we're four times the numbers to BC. So total cases in Ontario are 213K. Total cases in BC is 56,000. Total deaths in BC, just under a grand. Total deaths in Ontario, just under $5,000. So, you know, we have two very different provinces as far as their current state of infection and reaction and support. I would be interested to hear, I don't know, maybe Tim can do this as some research, as to what were some of the ramifications or what was the impact of having to shift to remote learning? Does in-school learning look any different now? And I'm not just talking about the masking and the sanitation issues, but I would wonder if, like, I don't have direct access to any BC teachers that I know of in my socials, but I would wonder if they are feeling like any moment they could get pulled from school, or if they've eased back into the sort of comfy mindset that we're on track, we're good. I don't think we're in that space in Ontario. I would love to chat with someone to wonder if they get up in the morning and they go to school, if they think to themselves, geez, you know, if it's a bit of a worry, as in if we don't do things right, we could get pulled, or if it's just a state of mind, I now know that I could be pulled at any moment, or if it's a future seeking, as in, you know what, we should be pulled. We shouldn't be doing schools like this. Because I think that the impact of post March 13th has made an indelible mark on education. And at the heart of it, it's said that we don't, on one really simple thing, is that we don't necessarily need the school buildings to do school. And as soon as you pull that element out of infrastructure, that's a massive game shift. And I don't mean to call it a game. That wasn't a good term, but it's just a massive thought shift, practice shift. It's not a game. It's not a game at all. I don't like that I use that word.
I get what you're saying, though. And anybody listening to the conversation in context will understand. But I have to say, so many things have shifted, right? And here's the other thing, too. In September, when we went back to school and they told us, see, my school board created a memo that was sent to all educators on how to pivot if we needed to pivot. And I've talked about it before, and anybody who listened to me has heard me say that to write a memo and to provide it to us is one thing. To actually have us pivot is a completely different thing. So, you know, I read the memo, but I didn't really know how to pivot, even though, like, we have a Google Classroom, we would use it, you know, it was blended learning, but I was there to say, hey, did you go in the classroom and finish this assignment? Did you use these tools to do this? And the kids never really like it was different. It was like a fire drill. You do them 3 times a school year. And when you're doing them, you never, not never, a lot of kids, I have to beg them to be quiet. I'm like, we're supposed to not be talking. We're supposed to walk out of the building. There's a fire. We're supposed to be like engaged and aware so that if we're given instructions or we need to shift where we're going or how we're going to get there, I don't have to be like, Jimmy, be quiet. I'm trying to get you out of the fiery building, right? And they don't get it until one day the fire alarm rings and they see the look on my face like, holy, you know what? This isn't a drill. Like, we need to get out of here now. I feel like that's what happened here. I feel like they just kept telling us, you need to be able to pivot. You need to be able to pivot. And we're like, okay. And as far as I was concerned, I was as ready as I could be to pivot. There was nothing more I could do than you telling me you're staying home for the week and you're teaching remotely. There was nothing short of that that could help me prepare for what I just did this week. Nothing. I had to do it. And this was a real fire this week. Like, there, this is not a drill.
That's what I was thinking that exact same thing. Like, I've had one emergency evacuation that I've had to be a part of in my I think 16 years teaching. A battery had melted down in one of the auto shops in a school, and we had to leave the building and walk over to the nearest high school. And they had to do the all call. We were back the next day. They had to do the air quality, all that kind of stuff. And so that's in 16 years, one. So in 1 year, we've now had 2 COVID fire drills with no practice. There was no drill. And I guess you don't call it a drill. We've now had 2 COVID alarms. It's not a drill anymore if you're actually having to do it. We've now had 2 COVID alarms. And in my mind, it's very much like what you're saying. And I know there's other individuals out there that their schools have done lockdowns and holding secures when sort of like the real stuff is, you know, it's no longer a drill. And you're in that mindset where like, is this a drill? Like, is really? It's, and then you sort of find, oh, it wasn't a drill. Something was actually going on. I think 100% across the board, everybody knows that we are officially in every single time. Like, this is the COVID alarm when it goes off. It's official. There is no guessing. And part of that too is that it's like we're aware. So let's say, like, you know, a fire drill, you might not be aware that there's a fire going on in the, you know, the math department in your own school. Yet, you know, you hear the alarm go off and you're going to leave the building. I think the difference with the COVID alarms is that you can watch the numbers. You watch the number. And this is why I'm also saying, if the numbers are not any different leading up to the 25th, then we're not going back into the school. We actually see all the external circumstances that would put us into another COVID alarm. So I think it's a great analogy, like the practice we do for fire drills. Sorry, the fire drills we do to practice for the real thing. Yet we have very little experience with the real thing.
And only when you do the real thing do things solidify within you. Like, now that we've done this, I've taught virtually synchronously this week. Mm-hmm. There is something now. I see the establishment of the new fluency within me. And as I've told you, I'm hunkering down, I'm embracing it. You know, like, it's if you ask me what I'd prefer, I think I still prefer to be at school face to face. But now I'm open to the idea that that might change, which is really scary for me, because this whole time, my colleagues who have had to go to the virtual school, St. Isidore, it's like I'm mourning them a loss. Like, they're mm-hmm. like, oh, God bless you. I wish you well in the afterlife. But now I'm like, maybe I want a piece of that afterlife. If I'm going to hunker down and I'm going to figure out how I can teach and how I can not only teach my students, but assess and evaluate their learning, then why should I still go to a building? Why don't I just go virtually? Seriously, I had that thought this morning, and I'm kind of proud of myself because I don't usually... I seemed to go there with ease this morning, And I think it's because I'm, in a way, mentally prepared for this, what I call nonsense, because this isn't how I learned to teach, right? But now that I just did it, and I have the weekend to relax a little bit and think, I'm like, well, maybe this is the way. I don't know. Like, I really don't know. I'm in that stage of, I just don't know, but I just survived that week. And I guess I'm going to have to keep planning for next week and the week after and the week after and the week after. And I'll get a better feel for it. And hopefully I'll become more comfortable. But I think this experience, I'm not pushing it away anymore. I'm not pushing it away because I think this is what teaching has become in Ontario. I think that, like you said, it's COVID now. What happens when COVID goes away?
It won't, though. See that, and I think that's what that's. I'll go back to a year ago, November. No teacher would have thought that their learning management system or their digital tools was the COVID drill, but we now see it is. We now see that's what we leaned on in order to transition. And we can see that other jurisdictions and school boards that didn't have access to these tools, they were getting in buses or remote places. They were getting in the school buses and dropping off paper packages in order to keep the kids in their learning. And then you had some jurisdictions that were somewhere between the two. They were dropping off Wi-Fi sticks and printed paper copy because there's no actual Wi-Fi in some of the spaces that their students bus in from. So all of this stuff now is officially a part, when I say indelible, because it is there. And the trigger is so, that string is so tightly tuned now that it's only going to take one pluck on it and hear the early warning, like it's that sort of like that early tone that we're going to know from the news and whatever that we're about to flip. And, you know, Tim mentioning about the snow days, and though I do appreciate that as part of the conversation, I guess, but I also feel like we are so past talking about what a snow day looks like, considering, I think, the implications on education here. As we are moving into this, I thought to myself, as systems, as education systems, we now have a third way officially. And I was saying this back in April and May, where some students were choosing not to attend virtual, but also choosing not to attend. So we were pure virtual, but they were sort of starting to talk about that if we went back, they weren't planning on going back to the building. They would just do whatever digital stuff was being posted. And right now we do have students activating this third path, that they are enrolled in the high school, face-to-face high school. So our school board is doing adaptive. So we have a long block one and then three shorter other blocks, so four blocks in total. That long block one is a alternating face-to-face between two cohorts. We do have students that are not going to the face-to-face at all on their face-to-face day. They're not coming in the building. And if we're really future casting here, we have to give serious consideration to what does the support look like for a student that is enrolled in, I can't even say regular high school, is enrolled in virtual high school or virtual education and enrolled in, I don't want to call it regular because we don't have access to that word anymore. There's no regular version of high school anymore. So the face-to-face version the adaptive or the blended version of high school, or the pure virtual version of high school. Within the adaptive or blended learning, you have two tiers. You have the one where the kids will come to school and do a little bit of their face-to-face, and they're going to do their online components as they rotate through. And they're going to have the kids that will never do the face-to-face and will only do all the work that's posted online. And this is the practice space. So this is the practice space for the next layer of the COVID alarm. So we have, I think we really do have to consider, you know, I don't know if there's any big changes going to be made for second semester, which for MI school board is coming up on February 3rd, February 4th, but definitely next September. How do we tell a student that you have to attend your face-to-face? And the student says, well, I don't want to go to virtual because I'm never going to see any of my friends ever. I'm not going to be connected with any of the teachers that I know from my high school. So there's stuff happening even now. Like, we can get swept up in this moment of teachers still trying to figure out what the reactive flip looks like to this current COVID alarm. But we're also building infrastructure moving forward. And the initial reaction and sort of taking the union stance, there were individuals just saying, well, this was really kind of the short-sighted and almost the really cold thinkers, really, really shrewd cold thinkers. Well, this is the best case scenario for Lecce. He gets his e-learning dream.
Oh, he loves it. Come on. Well,
he may. I don't know that because I've never heard him speak to that he, but it, you know what I mean? So I'll just go by, I don't have the evidence. I only have my own thinking. It's remarkable how the things that we were fighting for when we were on the picket became our conditions of employment, because we didn't want the e-learning. And then we got the e-learning. And this was something that was entirely, the COVID alarm was entirely outside of our sort of, let's say, outside of our doing initially. We had to just react and respond to it. So there's a ton of money that's been invested in developing this. Probably more money than the PC government would have ever invested on their own. Mm-hmm. But it's there now. And right. It's an invested infrastructure. And if we don't have conversations around what that's going to look like in September, even though the old system is there, I feel like it's kind of being put out to pasture a little bit.
I'm gonna repeat myself. The can of worms have been opened. There is no going back. The toothpaste is out of the tube. You can't put it back in there. This is the new normal. Like, really?
The new now.
Yeah, the new now. Like, get used to it, because I think
another one's coming in a week.
Well, it seems like it's constantly changing. Yep. And moving in a direction that maybe some people never thought it would move in, but this is it. Now, like, so next level thinking for me is, mm-hmm. eventually we need to start, or maybe we don't, but I'd like to think that we need to start standardizing what is needed in a necessary way to do our jobs right. This is just my opinion. So, for example, all my colleagues have different, they have different machines that can do different things as they do their teaching from home, right? And it's like, and I've told you, now I'm being selfish, right? I'm being selfish. So let me just give you my context. So in my family, there are four of us. I'm a teacher and my wife's a teacher, and we're both teaching remotely now. We're both teaching virtually. I'm in this room using the desktop that's hardwired to the internet, and I have a laptop beside me that's on the Wi-Fi, and I feel it works really well for me to have one screen to share my lessons and then one screen to see what's happening in the room when I can't see any of the kids, the chat features, the raising the hand, all that stuff, right? That's what I'm doing. My wife's in the dining room. So now our dining room table is her classroom, and she has her laptop, which she purchased herself. She bought herself a brand new computer, and she's using the Wi-Fi, and she's got an external camera, and she's got her whiteboard. Like, she's got her setup, Wi-Fi. Then there's my high school son, who's got a Chromebook from the school, and he's using that. And then there's my youngest son, who's in grade 5, and he has a Chromebook that used to be my wife's, but when she bought her new computer, she gave him her Chromebook. So every day, all four of us are on. So we don't know what that looks like with the Wi-Fi. Like, I'm the lucky one because I'm hardwired. So I'm getting the strongest, I'm getting the blast out of the fire hose, and they're getting whatever they get from the router. And it's been okay this week. It's been okay. But my desktop is old. It's like 15 years old. And I realized quickly, so when I'm doing stuff like this with you, when I'm podcasting with you and I've got some tabs open and we're flying, it takes care of business. But I learned quickly the other day that I was able to freeze up my computer very quickly when I had everything I needed to teach the way that I would like to teach. It couldn't keep up with me. It was like, what are you doing to me here? And it stopped working. And then I was like, okay, well, I can't push my computer like that anymore if I want to stay present with my students, right? If I want to be in the classroom with them, I can't do this, which has led me to begin to think in a different way on how I create my lessons, how I present my lessons to my students, and then what I expect them to give back to me, right? So that's all based on the machine I'm using to do my job. Now, you just bought an awesome computer that's really fast, and it's like it's up to date, it's modern. So I can only imagine you're doing like digital backflips over there, in my opinion, based on my knowledge of computers and what you have. And you know, I'm looking to get a new desktop. So the desktop I get is going to like, it's going to kill everything in its path. It's going to be so powerful. But I don't have that yet. Right. But literally, after my computer did what it did to me, I literally that night had to go and change my plans for the next day. I had to look at this is what I created. How do I present this to my students? What can I do at the same time, technology-wise, that's going to cause everything to work as well as it can based on my knowledge of it? That's a whole other layer that I think some people just don't get. I know some of my teacher colleagues are literally on a school Chromebook on their Wi-Fi. So they may be frustrated. They may not be frustrated. I don't know. But that's a whole conversation to be had. How do you make sure everybody has what they need to do the job that you'd like them to do? Maybe some people don't care. I know that I care. I've got a certain standard that I'd like to uphold when I'm in class with my students. And I've had to shift gears a little bit to make sure that I can teach. And so I'm feeling like I'm limited by the technology I have. But it's not like I'm still teaching. It's just not maybe the way that I would really like it to be. But then, hey, you get used to, you become fluent at what you're doing. So I think by the end of the week, I was feeling a little bit better about knowing my limitations with my tech, and now moving forward, building lessons and activities that I'm hoping my technology can deal with while we move. And I become more fluent with this work. That's a whole other conversation. There are many of these, right? I've got notes. I wrote notes on virtual learning this week. And the really interesting things that happen when you're no longer face-to-face with a group of students. And then one more thing before I be quiet for a second, let you retort, is the high school business. When I was dropping my son off at high school, man, it was the weirdest thing in the world. Do you have school today? Yeah, I've got school today and tomorrow, and then I flip back to being at home. I'm like, right on. Okay, be ready to leave by this time. I drop him off, and as my son's walking into the building, I can't help but think that high school's not happening the way high school used to happen. Like my youngest son said to me, Dad, when I go to high school, do you think the football team will be active again? Like, do you think I can try out for the football team when I'm in grade 9? And I'm like, I don't know, because you certainly can't play football now. And he's like, well, what about the hockey team? Do you think maybe I could try out for the hockey team? And I'm like, I hope that when you go to high school, that there is still a hockey team, that there is still a football team, that you can still try out for these extracurriculars that don't exist right now. My son in high school doesn't have a locker. He has no idea what to do with a locker because none of that exists anymore in this reality. And it's funny because my wife and I'll talk about high school. And I would love my son to experience some of the things that my wife and I experienced, but then I realize those days are over. This is a new world. And I know he's just in grade 9, but if COVID's never going to go away, we have to learn to manage it, and it's going to take years to do that. Will we ever return to any type of normal from the past? I don't know. So what has this done for me and my kids? I've told my kids, man, every day, enjoy what you have now, because you just don't know. Like, in a million years, if you would have told me I'd be teaching my class sitting at home and they're all sitting at home, I would have told you what an exciting, for me at the time, it would have been an exciting dream because I'm innovative. But now that I'm doing it, I'm like, wow, I kind of miss some of the face-to-face stuff.
Do you remember one of our first meetings was being connected with Stephen Hurley and going to the Canadian Educator? Is it Canadian Educator? I always forget if it's CEA. I just don't remember if it's Canadian Education Association or Educators Association.
I think it's Education.
Education? Yeah. So this old school education association that, a few of us got to meet. That's where I met Andrew Campbell. I met you. There were a couple other people there too that are sort of people now that I'm connected with. Rodneiser was there for part. Derek Rodneiser. Who else? Whoever some of the other.
Andrew Baranski.
Yeah. Yep. So individuals that had a couple conversations with, and it was interesting. What's fascinating, what I think back to now, is that one of the provocations, or thought experiments we did, is at the time Hurley was really big at talking about signals. Everything was about signals. He had that signals t-shirt on, but talking about sort of what signals do we have, what are we getting from the future that either we're kind of catching them, we don't know what to do with them, or we have a sense that something's being said, but we don't have the literacy or fluency to understand the language that it's coming in, right? Or even the fact that they're kind of happening. But I think we all kind of got into space as future seekers that there are signals from the future that are telling us about education. Well, I'll tell you, like, this wasn't on the radar.
Not at all.
No. And I remember we did one of the follow-up kind of activities. I don't know if it was the year later, because we had the fall and the spring session. Do you remember there was some newspaper activity that we did? Mm-hmm. And you were writing about the man from the future. I forget. Do you remember what you wrote about that?
I don't remember.
But do you remember this activity? We had to write in the voice as someone in the future about something that was happening in education. And I think that, that type of thinking is always, it's fun. I mean, if you're in the right, you're vibing on it, right? But it's also interesting how maybe we had a sense of what was going on, but definitely no, you start to think about the X factors that can completely tip that type of future casting on its side, right? Mm-hmm. But I remember, you and I met in this future sort of like, you and I met in a mindset, a meeting that already had the mindset that what we're doing right now in school was possible. Yet that was 5 years. So that's the time distance, right? 5-6 years ago, you and I, Bronski, Campbell, Hurley, I don't know if Noah maybe was at one of those meetings.
Derek was there. I don't remember Noah.
Yeah. I can't remember all the faces there. It is so long in the past, right? But anyways, we, in 6 years, it took us 6 years to get to this, and not in the way that we thought. Nobody mentioned worldwide pandemic would actually flip us to full online learning.
And even if they had, imagine somebody in our group said, world pandemic, baby, everybody goes virtual. I think you and I probably would have laughed at the time. I probably would have been like, I'm going to go get myself another donut.
Yeah, like who's that guy?
Yeah, who invited this guy? Who put this guy in our group, right?
That would have been so far outside of the scope. Yet it's so simple. The elegance of this problem to activate a really complex school system, to mobilize it, is stunning. Absolutely stunning.
And again, I'm going to push now. I'm going to say, because I know you and I talk leadership. We have interests in educational leadership. And even now,
I'm going to take the PQP2.
No, you didn't. But thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, I'm going to take the digital version, I think, in February.
Nice. Well, you've only done digital PQP, right?
I did. Dude. Circle back to that, though. Circle back to that. Okay. Get your point out.
Back in the day, I did PQP face-to-face. I actually sat with other humans who were breathing in my face. And
old school.
Very old school. We broke bread together. And, dude, I was expected to put clothes on and drive somewhere and spend half a day with people.
Pants.
Unbelievable. But anyway, so from a leadership lens, now that I'm feeling I'm ready to go there now. I'm ready to think leadership in this new world, which is – again, fascinating, fascinating. And I'm proud to say, this is so cool, this connection, but I am proud to say that the principal of our virtual school and my board was one of my mentors when I was doing the leadership program in my board. So when you got to part three of the leadership program in our board, you got to pick, you got to choose a principal in the system that would mentor you around like your questions around leadership, and you would get to job shadow them and stuff. And in my opinion, I picked two amazing female principals to mentor me. And one of them is now the principal of the virtual school. And so I think it's cool that I have a connection with her. And then one of the vice principals of the school, I didn't take PQP with her. I taught with her at my last school, which was awesome. She's a great educator, a great leader. And so it's like, it's exciting to me that the people that I've worked with and looked up to around leadership are now leading it from that perspective. So as someone with an interest in leadership, and now seeing as how it has shifted, right? There's a whole new virtual world of education and it's not going anywhere. I think now I'm ready to think a little bit about leadership and what that looks like in a virtual world. And I feel like I have a connection. I feel like I can lean on that person and say, hey, when you have a second, when you come up for air, I'd love to talk to you about leadership in the virtual world, because nobody else has done it like she has. She's basically had to start the school and run with it. And I think it's awesome. And I think she's an amazing person, an amazing educator with a great skill set. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that it helps me kind of feel a little bit better about that. But even now, like, I'd love to hear more about that, right? Because when I took PQP and the principals I know and admire and respect, we're all doing this together at the same time now, right? Like, the principals at the virtual school, I would say, are leading. They're at the cutting edge of it because they've had to do it every day, and they're ahead of the curve. Like, they know some of the pitfalls, some of the problems, some of the solutions, right? Some of the wonderings they're having, we may not even get there for a little bit longer, but I'm interested. I'd like to delve into that a little bit more. What does it look like to principal a school that is virtual?
Couple things. I don't know if I would use the word ahead of the curve because we don't know where we are. So what do you compare it to, right? You don't have any base data necessarily to compare yourself to what's if you're ahead of the curve, what is the curve, right? What's actually the data in that curve? Second thing is, because of that, I don't know if they actually feel like they're on the front edge of anything. I would say they're probably very much in the now, very much in the now, constantly just triaging and sort of problem solving. But there is a element of I think there's an element of kind of thought fuel confusion that can happen when you're having to iterate at the same time that change is coming at you. Like, you need time away from change to sort of, I think, get some perspective on the tools that you've put in motion. Not too much distance, because you still need to be kind of connected to it to kind of be able to watch what that experiment looks like. My sense of it right now in talking with administrators is that the rate of change is evolving too quickly to be able to really data track if any particular tool or strategy is successful. I had a thought sort of like, the other thing that you got me thinking about as far as leadership goes is there's a whole lot of, COVID as a lens on education has me kind of re-examining every equity conversation I had prior to COVID. And again, it's a little bit like I just messaged Hurley talking about the signals to the future.
I saw that.
Yeah, and just said to him, you know, those conversations, you know, him pushing the signals, none of us were throwing down on pandemic to sort of activate and mobilize our modern learning tools. Like, that wasn't one of the things that was going to instigate change with modern learning towards an optimal end. Pandemic was not, no one was suggesting that. But it's got me being thinking backwards a little bit about the conversations that COVID as the new lens. What are the conversations that we did not have that we need to have moving forward? So it's not just about, you know, it's sort of COVID as an equity litmus is really, it's easy to kind of focus, I think, on the technological deficits. Does this family have Wi-Fi? Does this family have a stable Chromebook? Do they have enough Chromebooks because it's a multi-kid household? I'm more looking at the conversations that now that we're officially in their living rooms and sitting at their kitchen tables, what can we know? And we talked about this briefly, I think, a couple episodes ago. We now absolutely need a new mandate to, I think, honor our new responsibilities as a member of their family. And I'm not quite sure what that conversation looks like, or even entirely what I'm saying, but I'm aware of the fact that I'm having so many more conversations with families that cannot be answered by improving a kid's curricular outcomes. I'm having more conversations than once about, you know, my feedback on an assignment wasn't clear. Like, that's not the conversations I'm having this year. I'm having conversations around the struggles of single parent families. I'm having conversations around kids having to go to local Tim Hortons to do work. I'm having conversations around, sorry, sir, that's my older sibling and they're screaming at me. I'm having conversations around, like a fascinating one that still stuns me, a kid asking me if they can get up and go to the bathroom. And I think to myself, what is it about education right now that's enforcing a mindset that a child has to ask for permission in their own home to go to the bathroom? And that becomes my new litmus for equity. Because that's a little bit strange to me. And I see it pop up in the chat. Sometimes it's out loud. Sir, can I just grab a drink of water? By giving permission, because it's a conversation, it's a question, I'm reinforcing the system of power and control that I have over them in their own house. Yep, go ahead, go to the bathroom. Really? I'm giving permission for a child in their own house to go to the bathroom? So this is the sort of, like, in retrospect, the equity conversations now are really, it's all the same. It's all the stuff. It's all the stuff that the book clubs were running over the summer, just post March 13th. It's all of that stuff and more.
you got me lit up about the bathroom because I've been getting it too. But I have to say, now this may be wrong, but this is me. I'm not saying to them, hey, you're at home, get up and go when you want, because I'm really concerned that that's going to give them permission to just get up and leave whenever they want for whatever they want, which means they're not getting anything I'm giving. So I'm like, yes, you can. Every time they ask, a couple of times they've asked, I said, well, can you just hold on a second? Because what I'm about to say, you really need to hear, and then you can go. And I've been pushing the narrative of, hey, this is school. I'm here to teach you. That means that you're supposed to be on the other end, sitting and engaged with me. Now, maybe this is the difference between high school and elementary, because my son in high school doesn't ask to go to the bathroom. Sometimes I'll turn and he'll be right there. And I'm like, what are you doing here? He goes, I was just whatever. I'm like, get back to class. Like, what are you doing? Get back to class, right? But for me, and I know, don't get me wrong, I know there are kids on the other end of my class that are the computer's on, the camera's off, they've said they're present, and boom, they're gone. I get that. But for the ones that are saying, can I go to the bathroom? I'm like, okay, well, there's a good chance that if they're asking me to go to the bathroom, that they're currently engaged. And they're like, well, I'm going to leave, and I want you to know I'm leaving. There's a good chance. I don't really know what's happening on the other end. And that's the disadvantage, I think, of this virtual thing, because I don't know what's happening on the other end.
I can't help but think about that enforcement and compliance structure. And I get where you are. I get where the kid is. And somewhere in between, I'm really uncomfortable with, if a child doesn't have to ask to go to the bathroom when they're in their own house, as in if they don't have to ask their parents to go to the toilet, why should they ask you?
Because I'll tell you what I think. I think it's a different relationship. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with you. Like, if my son who's in grade 5 needs to go to the bathroom, I'll tell him as his dad, dude, you can get up and go. Like, I'm okay with that as your parent. Get up and go. You don't need to ask. Mm-hmm. But in some situations, my students don't have anybody there with them to tell them that. And I just feel, this is how I feel. I certainly, if a student comes on the mic and says, hey, Mr. C, can you explain that thing again? And I might say, well, I just explained it. And then they might say, I went to the bathroom. I wasn't here. I'm not going to say to them, well, you can't go without telling me. I'd be like, okay, thanks for letting me know. And then I would say something and lead them on their way. So in one way, I'm certainly not, as their teacher, going to say to them, how dare you, having left my class without telling me. I'm not going to do that. But I'm also not going to announce that they're free to come and go as they please, because I already have some coming and going as they please, and they're not getting anything out of it. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand your discomfort. I, as their teacher, being present to teach them a lesson and to help them with their learning, that's my job. And unless somebody tells me otherwise, I take that as seriously as I can. And I'm not about to say, hey, get up and go do what you want, because they're 8 years old. Now, I know you have an 8-year-old, so I'd love to hear your perspective as a parent. I'll tell you, if they get up and go to do something or eat something, I'm not stopping them. But if they say, hey, can I go to the bathroom? And I'm like, can you just wait a minute? Because I'm in the middle of something. And if I'm not, I'll say, go ahead, go to the bathroom. I'll see you when you get back. I feel there's a different relationship. And I feel it's going to get pretty tricky and pretty weird if the teacher-student relationship starts to dissolve in a way where, what's the point of even listening to the teacher? There's a dude talking on the computer. I don't care what he's teaching. I'll just bother him later and ask him what the math is about, and he'll probably tell me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of this in a similar fashion to my own classroom. And what does it mean? What does maintaining dignity of the child look like? I guess that's what I'm looking at it from. And if I'm choosing, so if a child, if I believe that a child has the same self-regulation tools as me, then I think telling them to wait could be reasonable. But if I'm telling a child that doesn't have the same self-regulation tools as me, and it's not a moment to teach them about self-regulation when they feel like they're about to pee themselves, because they may have up to that point held it because everything else seemed important too. And there's just a pause in the conversation. And that might be, you know, one of the social conventions that they understand, that as long as the teacher's not talking, you can ask a question, like don't interrupt the teacher. So they're not interrupting. They figure they're asking the question at the right time, and then potentially being told, well, no, wait one more minute while I explain this thing. And then they piss themselves. And then there's a whole other conversation afterwards around, you know, if we talk about the obligation responsibility as the caring adults in the room, it becomes a little weird, right? It gets a little bit weird. And I do get both sides. And I think this is why it's a challenge for me to think about this. And often my pat response, because I try and neutralize the power dynamic whenever someone asks me that question, all I say is, of course. That's it. Every single time. Can I get a snack? Of course. Can I get up and stretch? Of course. Can I go to the bathroom? Of course.
But you have to know, if they say to me, I got to go really bad, I'm not going to hold them back.
But depending on their perception of their relationship with you, they may never actually escalate it and say, no, sir, I'm being truthful. I really am about to poop my pants. And then of course, like if they're not prepared to do that, because the teacher holds the power, right?
Well, I have to tell you, Chris, I hear what you're saying. I don't agree with you. That's all I have to say. So if a kid says, I just pissed myself, I say, that's unfortunate. Since you're at home, go and shower off and change. There have been times where kids have peed their pants in my class because mm-hmm. they simply didn't feel that they could ask to go.
Yeah,
when it does happen. It happens. And trust me, I am joking about it right now, but I don't make light of it. It's never fun for a kid to do that or whatever. But I think I always start my school year off with if you need to go and I say no for whatever reason, and it's rare. It might be I'm literally in the middle of something and I'm like, just hold on. And then I've never had a situation where they've said, okay, I'll hold on. Then they piss themselves. They're like, no, I have to go now. And I'm like, okay, go. So I always tell my kids, if you need to vomit, or if you have to go so bad that you can't get my attention, go. Yeah. So if I see you take off out of the room, I'm not going to be like, how dare Julie leave in the middle of my lesson? I'm going to be like, uh-oh, so-and-so, can you go to the bathroom and check in on them and report back? Like, let me know if they're okay, if they need help. And then it's always, oh, they're vomiting, or they're in the stall, they're going to be a while. It's like, okay, thanks. And then when the kid comes back, I'm like, I'm so happy that you took my advice. You knew you had to go. You knew you were going to vomit or whatever, and you got out of here. Awesome.
Yeah.
I understand your power thing, your equity. I understand everything you're saying, but I am not prepared to just let loose on all that now all of a sudden because we're not face-to-face or because I'm a classroom teacher and they're 8-year-olds. I'm just not.
Yeah, and I'm not leveraging that because I understand too that there's a lot of gray zone right now about what does due diligence look like? Like we have to make it through almost this full year of the experiment to be able to then put together. I think what are the like OCT, and this isn't me sort of shining them up, but the standards of practice and ethical standards of practice, like I think they're probably going to have to, in order to bring it from, you know, down from on high to where everyone is kind of existing during the school year, there's going to be some work, I think, to unpack those things a little bit, just so that we understand exactly. And this is the collaborative work, probably, as you mentioned before, you didn't say collaborative work, but bringing the unions and OCT together at a table where they say, okay, did we just like the signals with Hurley? Were we really thinking about a pandemic when we put these things together? So coming back in with new information, and there's probably going to be some reserve that that information on the page works no matter the context. But I'm not sure that it does. not in the way that it was imagined, not in the way that the relationships were perceived, and not in the way that the legislation allows us to do our job. So I think that going back to the table with that is part of that gray zone that I'm talking about in the dignity of the kid. Like if we're using analog tools, if we're using analog thinking and whatever that came along with the classroom that was between the bells in order to manage the child in their house, I would contend that we need to find ways to get out of that thinking to be able to fully build the relationships that we need to with the kids while they're at home. Because we no longer have the school as the hub. We no longer have the multiplier or the enforcement or the structure of the school to sort of jumpstart these relationships. So when it comes to the dignity of it, you know, I would even think of, like, I'm trying to think of what if me teaching from home right now, and I walk into the kitchen and I hear my son say, because he will sort of stay in whatever the activity is until the 11th hour. And then all of a sudden he's got to go to the bathroom. And it really is, it's real. So me walking into the kitchen, knowing that about my son, hearing him ask for it, and then hearing the teacher say, can you hold on one more minute? And I know he's going to be conflicted. I know he's going to be conflicted and he'll probably comply. But I also know the potential cost on the other end, the cleanup that we'd probably have to do. And then he probably won't be back in class for a little bit. So it's not that this has happened, but I guess I'm using my own children as sort of, if I heard that conversation kind of pop up, I know what I would be saying to him, like, go, don't even ask, go, just go.
So I want to say a couple of things. First, I want to say welcome to Christine. For those of you listening and not watching, we have like a comment feed, and Christine C has come over and to the dark side and checked us out. She said, hey guys, it's my new thing to listen on Saturday mornings. Thanks, Christine, for checking us out. We appreciate it.
That's a good thing.
No, I think, well,
I like being part of a morning routine.
Chids and Clough Saturday mornings. That could be a whole commercial thing. But anyway, welcome. So thanks for coming over, checking it out. I want to go back to something funny that happened this week. So one of my students who started the school year off at the virtual school, who then moved face to face, who is now virtual because we're all virtual.
Yep.
His mic was on, and he said something. His dad was there, and he's like, I just need to let Mr. C. I need to go to the bathroom. And his dad goes, just type it in the chat. Like, just tell him you're going to the bathroom. And then the kid said, the chat's turned off. Because when we started,
yeah,
you know, I was still learning, how do I navigate this? How do I do this? And the chat was off, and the kids were pissed. They're like, why is the chat off? Why can't I share my screen? Why do I need permission to come into the room? And I'm like, whoa. Here's where I need to lean on my face-to-face relationship with them. I said, watch your tone. Take it easy. Remember where you are right now. Mm-hmm. They're like, they're probably looking around. They're like, I'm in my living room. But I was No. You're at school right now. I'm responsible for you right now. So remember where you are and who you're talking to. So like, okay, sorry, Mr. C. Why are all these options turned off? And I'm like, great question. Can we talk about it as a class? So, yeah, of course. We had one of our first classroom meetings was around, listen, Mr. Chidiak is new to this. They're like, no, you're not. We have Google Hangouts with people all the time. And I said, I'm new to teaching you solely in this environment. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Chidiak wants to make sure that if you need to know something about a tool and I'm responsible for you during that time, I'd like to know how to use the tool properly. So I'm like, it's our first or second day. Chill out. Like, we'll get it open. And then as the week went on, you know, I opened the chat. But then I talked about the chat. I'm like, I opened it and I saw what they were doing in the chat. And I said, look at what you're doing in the chat. And they looked. And I'm like, 2% of it is acceptable. The other 98 is not. So let's build the expectations around how to use the chat when you're in a classroom with me.
Yeah. So
did it. And then guess what? It started operating the way I expect it to while we're learning. And then the kids are policing each other. Somebody will say something. They're like, Mr. C and us agreed that we wouldn't do that. So stop it. You know, they're being polite. They weren't being rude about it. And then the kid would stop. And then, you know, as we kept going, I opened up the sharing their screens so that, you know, we're doing something. They're like, Mr. C, it's not working. And I'm like, what do you mean it's not working? And they're like, what you told us to do isn't working. I said, okay, share your screen with me. Let's take a look. And then they would. And then I would see what they could see and I could troubleshoot with them.
Yep.
And it was, so it was really cool, right? Like it was really cool to, but that's my relationship with them, Clough. Like that's my responsibility. So sure, you can get up and go to the bathroom if you want, but I'm not going to tell you just outright in a classroom meeting, just get up and go. Hmm. That's all they're going to hear. They're not going to hear at the bathroom to get a drink. They're going to be like, I'm going to go play Xbox. Mr. C said I could just get up and go. I can't have that. I can't have them saying that. So, and they can do and say what they want. But if they're checking in with me, 99% of the time they say, can I get a drink? Can I go to the bathroom? I'm like, yeah, of course. There's no issue. It's rare, but it's like, and then they'll tell me if they have to go bad. Anyway, they might not because of whatever. But this is something we need to work through as teacher-student relationship, in my opinion. But I really appreciate you providing me with some of that flavor because it's funny because me as a teacher operates one way, but me as a dad at home operates in another. Like early on this week, my youngest said, I'm going to have homework. We said, no, 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 no. He's looking at us like we're crazy. And we're like, your parents are like, we're barely here mentally and physically. We're not doing homework. We have to, number one, we have to plan for the next day.
Yeah.
Number two, we're helping your brother try to get that math credit in high school. There's no time for grade five homework if you need us. So it was just interesting the way things are rolling out even at home as a parent.
Yeah.
Can I drop one more topic before we go?
Sure.
I want to touch upon our book club meeting this week. So okay. We started a new book, Modern Manhood. And I know we've had two meetings. The first meeting was, if you can make it, come on out. Let's just chit chat for an hour, get to know each other a little bit better for the new people or whatever. And then this meeting was talking about chapter one and two of the book. And I have to tell you, because I can't gather with people face to face, and I never really did before the pandemic, but now that I'm not supposed to, it kind of feels weird that I shouldn't be. And I have to say that it was really awesome to gather with the guys to talk about this book that's been written about how to become a better man, talking with men about that and about, like, you know, we talked about parenting, we talked about being husbands and dads, being educators. Like it was, it didn't disappoint. You know, this is the third men's book club that we've been part of. And I already feel like the good stuff's there and we're going to be dealing with, you know, we talk straight and I'm hoping, I know, you know, humans ultimately make judgments, but truly I'm not judging. I'm listening to people's truth and their stories and I'm honored that they would open up in a group like that with us. So I just want to drop that just because I feel like with everything we're doing, there is some normalness in the book club. And it was born from the pandemic when we started back in the spring. It was born from the pandemic, you know? It was during the pandemic that I was able to explore some things about myself that then led to this. And now I think it's pretty awesome to be able to lean on something like that. So I hope other people have things to lean on to get them through what I would call this nonsense, you know, the weirdest thing in the world to live through history in this way. I wanted to throw that out there.
No, it's good stuff. Cleo Stiller is the author of that book. So shout out, hat tip to Cleo. Yeah, the book club for men is, it has a kind of like a bigger, I'm starting to feel like there's a bigger mandate than just talking about the books, which is cool. Like, I feel like there is we get into the deep topics. We get to float through a lot of different spaces that allow us to explore identity. So I like that. And there's a good mix of age, background, experience, and everyone's kind of throwing down. I feel in a genuine manner. So it's cool. It's a trusted and trustworthy space for us to explore some of these topics. And ultimately, I think, you know, no one's officially declared anything like this, but it really, I think the Book Club for Men, part of what we're doing is trying to figure out kind of what Cleo's trying to figure out in this book too, is like, what does it mean to be a modern man? Like, what does it mean? And what are the implications and what are some of the challenges and, the confusions. So I dig that. I've started to, crave the fellowship in a way that I feel is beneficial to me, like to be able to land there and talk about the topics that we do. I feel it's slowly kind of sinking into the cracks in my dad operating system, my man operating system. And I enjoy it. I enjoy the humor and the lightness and the sensitivity of it as well. Sensitivity and compassion.
I'm loving the openness to being a man and not being defined by what that means, by the stereotypical definition of being a man. Like, I'm really in the middle of that. I'm enjoying that to be a man means more than what I grew up having it mean, right? Like, it's funny because growing up as a identifying as a male and then becoming a man based on the checklist that I had seen or was provided to me as I was growing up. It's kind of interesting now that I've got the checklist and it's like, it doesn't really mean anything anymore. There's a new checklist. The new checklist is a lot more modern and a lot more open about what it means to be a man. And then everybody's got their own perspective on that, right? Like, everybody's got their own, they're coming from a certain place. So, and I think that this group honors that. Like, this group truly honors that openness of being a man means whatever it means to you. It doesn't have to be the same thing that it means to me. I think the bottom line for me, the one underlying thing that we all have in common is that at the very least, being a man means stepping up and doing your job, no matter what your job is. That's like the underlying commonality, is we step up and we do what we feel needs to be done to move forward, whether it be as a partner, whether it be as a father, whether it be as a professional. It's that owning who you are and what you are, and then moving forward with it. I would say that's the only thing that is truly an underlying commonality with all of us at this point in the game, that willingness to take the next step.
Yep. I would agree. Hurley just, he posted up to Twitter a picture of the second session. It's kind of cool. Both of us are in the shot. Somehow he had a photo of you and me in that shot.
And it's funny because I was right in the middle of responding to that tweet. I'm doing it right now. I saw that and the first thing I thought was, well, I responded. I just said, what a blast from the past. Mm-hmm. Like, everything about that photo screams the past. Like, look at the room we're sitting in. We're, mm-hmm. It was at the Toronto District School Board, one of their, like, in my school board, we only have one board office.
Yeah.
The main board office.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this the main one or is this one?
It might be definitely one of the board offices. Yeah. Definitely one of them.
And the room we're sitting in is so dated in terms of the,
it was a surreal looking room, like the design of it. Surreal.
It even looks like a bunker. Like, it looks like the pandemic is happening outside and we're underground in a bunker.
It's funny you should say that. I'm playing a video game right now called Control. It's actually called Control, and the look looks like this.
Okay.
Look at the photos of the old men on the wall.
I know, it's so old school and it's so layered.
And the gallery that almost makes it feel like we're like it's in Rome, you know, like the gladiatorial kind of a setup, like the gallery up top, and yeah, and the purple carpet. Check that carpet,
dude. I was just about to say that regal carpet. So that screams privilege. That money. Purple carpet, money, privilege.
I love the matching chairs.
The chair, yeah, matching chairs. I love like the cement walls with nothing on them except the pictures of the old men who have come before us, who have led before us, you know, everything about it.
Each with their own floodlight.
Right. And then the tech up front, the laptop and the projector, it's like old school meets new school. Yep. Like, look at, oh my God, like the COVID that could have been spread in there is unbelievable.
I had my hands are right on my mouth. I would never do that now.
And then you would have touched a pencil that somebody else may have touched, your horrible glove. Totally. Now I'm laughing. So if you look carefully, I'm smiling in that photo. So Derek must be spitting some kind of truth, but
could be. I might have just texted you something. It could be. Yeah, Rodnizer's in full hand effect, but yeah, he's chatting something up there.
So the beauty is that the people watching and listening have no idea what we're talking about, but on Twitter, so Chris and I met, what was it, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. We met at this event that Stephen Hurley, who's the creator, chief catalyst, he likes to call himself at Voice mm-hmm. and Radio. He did some work for the Canadian Educational Association, we think it's called, and he put together this really cool experience where he brought educators together to talk about the future of education. And Clough and I both applied. We were both fortunate enough to be chosen. And we met face-to-face. Now, that was the second meeting, because the first meeting was at a school in York or Peel region?
I think maybe Peel.
Okay, so it was at a Catholic school in Peel. I recall it was a Catholic school.
Yeah, yeah.
And we met in one of they had this really big multi-purpose room.
Yep.
We met there, and it was really cool. And then the second time we met at a Toronto District School Board office in a board room. And we were just reminiscing about that. And Stephen, we were bugging him on Twitter, and he posted a picture. And the picture he posted has both Chris and I in the shot, but we're both sitting at different tables in different groups talking about the future of education. I see Andrew Baronski there mm-hmm. and Derek Rodnizer, but I don't remember the names of some of the other people in the photo. I think Andrew Campbell is on the far left with the green jacket on the chair. I think that's AC.
Yeah.
So that was like, what a time. What a time to think outside the box and to reflect. And now that I think about it, now when I look at that photo, that experience did so much for me professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. So much. What an episode, Chris. I appreciate your time. We almost have a buck 30 under us, an hour and 30 minutes almost. I think it was needed after this week. I think we talked a lot about, my notes, Roland's reentry, what we're experiencing is our new fluency, the can of worms is open, to do school face-to-face and virtually, and what you drew hope, nope and hope is written on your thing, and with a lot of really cool colors in the background, look like they've been scribbled on by a kindergartner, mm-hmm. but that's a fantastic drawing. Thank you for doing that.
You're very welcome.
The pivot was real this last week in Ontario. And my last note is signals from the future.
Mm-hmm.
I will never forget when I heard about COVID across the world. And look at us now.
Yep.
We are hip deep. And what I wanted to say at the beginning of this hour and a half was that when you gave me the numbers of COVID cases in BC, you know what I thought? I thought, what a joke. That's a joke over there. That's nothing. We'd be in school no problem if we only had 50,000 people that had COVID. Like, mm-hmm. it's funny, perspective and comparison. Those numbers in BC, they're a joke compared to our numbers here in terms of we used to be there and we were like, everything's okay. And look at where we're at now.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome, dude.
Have a good
actually,
one.
Actually, no, I won't even say it. No, because it's I can actually look to see when we were there. If you it's quite I don't know if I got time to do it now, but yeah, if you just put in, you know, the numbers, you can actually there's a sliding scale and you can actually see when we were at that number. And yeah, I don't even want to look at it anymore. Anyways, yeah. You can look it up. I don't spend a lot of time looking at the numbers. This was just for, you know, kind of to sort of, you know, compare because Tim lit in on the, you know, BC's been back in school and their numbers are a lot lower than ours. So,
well, if our numbers were that low, we'd be in school too.
We would be. All right,
have,
dude.
Have a good one.
Yeah. Peace, man.